Hi, this is Stan Collymore.
And you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
I'm your host, Anthony Kendrick, and I'm delighted to be joined tonight by Nick Davey.
Good evening.
Shane Lees.
Hello.
And finally, Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening.
Hooray!
Hooray! So I just wanted to start by saying that we're celebrating our fourth birthday as a V2 Football Podcast. I wasn't here from the start, but yeah.
Hero,
I believe it's on the first episode. I don't recall it, but I keep being told it was.
I listened to it the other day, actually. It was you, Chris, and friends. I can't really remember it, but it was an okay episode. I think we were discussing the end of the 2013-14 season. I think the season where a certain player slipped over in a big game.
Good times.
Well, it is a good one. Sorry to I'm not trying to act like the host here. How about we all name our favourite moment?
I was just going to say that.
So me and you, Anthony, we all think on the same level.
I'm sure there was one involving Trebs where he completely mucked up something.
There's a lot of them. I'm just good at editing.
I'm going to go with Nick's various singing. That'll be mine.
You went on about some player and it was just like, Shane's Ukraine for the Euros.
That was a great prediction. Do not knock it. They did not score a goal. That's how bad they were.
I've got a couple.
I like the famous heavy breathing episode where we had a great podcast that Chris would end up breathing the whole episode. Or the one where we played that battleship type game and our geography wasn't very good and we ended up guessing. We just ended up doing very badly.
That was one of the ones I made up, and it was impossible.
Everything I guess and landed me in the oceans.
Yeah. Well, we should revisit that game again. I thought that was a good one.
Yeah, I'd have to say a highlight was that custom-made Tom Cleverley quiz that was created just for me. I really, that's my favourite ever show.
Oh, that was it. And when Shane had his I Know Everything About the World Cup 2010 in South Africa.
Yeah, I was going to highlight that as one of my favourite moments, but now that you brought it up, fuck you, it's one of my worst moments.
And then when he did the quiz on it, you came last.
Keep talking, Richard, keep talking.
Well,
I hope there's no repose, by the way. Just keep talking, yeah.
We were talking about predictions. I know at the end of the show, one of the awards we'll be giving out is for the worst prediction we made this season. So, yeah, that's quite a fun one. But anyway, got a few quick stories I just want to mention before we go on with the show. Firstly, I just want to say, sad news with Cheick Tiote, who collapsed in training the other day, and he's died. I'm sure everyone will remember him from his spell at Newcastle and mainly that goal he scored against Arsenal.
Well, there is just no words, really, isn't there? It's just terrible, terrible news to end a terrible week around the country, really. And it's just, I can only offer condolences to his family,
Was it him or was it Papi Cisse that when they initially joined Newcastle, there was some sort of rumours about them having car problems?
I thought it was Demba Ba.
There's an article on someone on Twitter, I think I saw it last night.
The problem is, people will talk about this after and say, how can we have spotted this? What can we do better? The problem is with some of these issues is they're not apparent until we're at the point where they'll kill you. Or they're just so hard to spot anyway. If they were easy to spot, they'd be found out by the physios straight away. So I think the one thing I always want to be hesitant of doing is being overly critical of medical staff and so on, because I think if you're dealing with such impossibilities, sometimes it is just, that's the way the cards were dealt. And it seems horrible to say it, but it's just a tragedy. That's all you can really put it down to, is a tragedy, not some oversight from a physio or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife teaches Malumbu's child or son, and that was an another one where, you know, you couldn't have said beforehand that that was going to happen. It just, fortunately, at that day, they had the medical staff to react and deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Moving on from that, I was at Michael Carrick's testimonial the other day, and he scored a cracking goal to equalise for United of 2008 against Carrick All Stars. Saw a lot of boos there as well for John Terry and Jamie Carragher.
I thought it was quite a fun match, actually. I loved the Gary Neville attempt at goal.
Yeah, that was a great
attempt. That's one that's been shown quite like a lot again on bloop reveals, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know that's going to end up on Monday Night Football, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
And Carragher's attempted tackle on him as well at one point, where he just wrestled him to the ground.
I thought Carragher in that game, he perfected the smiling tackle. Just having a massive grin on his face as he's trying to just yank someone to the floor. Oh, that was excellent. The one thing that really stood out for me, though, was, I don't know, it's a testimonial, we were supposed to be kind of positive and all that, but just how shit it's Wayne Rooney.
The fact that Clarence Seedorf, who's retired for how many years, was running rings around him.
Honestly, the worst thing is, you can tell, especially by the second half, he was trying. It's not like he wasn't trying. You can tell he was
acting. And it's like ranting on his own stuff.
Oh yeah, when the penalty didn't get given, that was what I thought was almost embarrassing, was that he was clearly trying very hard. He was easily one of the worst players on the pitch in a game where most players aren't trying very hard. That is one hell of a fall from grace.
I think Michael Carrick's brother actually looks a bit better than
him. Hey, and a great little memory, chested the ball back to keeper. What was your very good football?
I think it's really upsetting about Rooney. He clearly isn't very good anymore.
Well, the sooner the Everton come in for him, the better, I think.
But if, to be fair, though, and I don't mean to make a debate about this, but if I was Everton, I'd sooner spend the money on Gylfi Sigurdsson.
I'd sooner just not spend the money on him. I don't care if we didn't get anyone in return, just don't spend any money on him.
Going back to your point about Clarence Seedorf, though, I've seen him playing quite a few things. He usually plays in whatever United do, whether it's Soccer Aid or testimonials and stuff, but it's amazing how much quality he's got despite his age. He just didn't lose the ball at all, and you know, it was fantastic.
He retired quite late, didn't he? So I think he retired very late, basically, and he was still the day he retired, he was still doing a pretty good job in the Champions League.
I think it's a good example of the difference between good conditioning and bad conditioning. Apparently, I'll say, he's clearly retired, but he still made it his mission to take care of himself, to make sure he's still practicing regularly, because you can't just have that ability innately if you don't take care of yourself. Take a look at what's his name, Razor Ruddock. He will go to hell. And I think that's the difference between some of the really top level players, the players you look at and go, they were world class for their generation. The ones who weren't is they maintain that element of professionalism through every element of their career. And that was one of the differences between Rooney. And if you look at Rooney when he's Seedorf's age, he's not going to be anywhere near that, considering he's not near it currently. It's a bit of a difference of the examples of how professionals can maintain themselves, not just, you know, when they finish their career, but even going into the late stages of their career, what they can do there. There aren't that many examples of English players who have gone on to have really long careers because they've actually managed to do it. There's only a few. The most obvious example I can think of is Teddy Sheringham. But even then, you're looking at sort of so few players. It's quite common for players who are coming in from abroad, especially Italians, Dutch players, it's also very common, where they're having their career well into, you know, their late 30s. I think, well, maybe we're missing a trick in the way we're doing training or something like that, because I know it's a charity match and we shouldn't take ever too much from it, but that was one thing that really did stand out to me.
I think the physicality of the English game, though, has a factor in it. You often see players ending the, you know, going over to Italy, Serie A, in the later days of the career, because it's regarded as a, you know, not as a physical league, you know, a slower pace league.
I think the other point you could make is, as well, in England, you look at someone like Wayne Rooney, or, you know, many other English players are thrust into the limelight and played from a much younger age. I mean, over his career, Rooney's, I don't know the exact figure of number of games he's played, but he's played a lot of games over his career and started very young. Maybe there's that aspect as well. We don't look after our young players well enough with burnout and stuff.
Yeah, the glaring contrast with that, though, and I think we mentioned it a few times in the podcast, is, you know, Ronaldo was around the same age, so was Messi. Look at the physical specimens of them two, and then compare it to Rooney.
I do have to agree with Richard there. It's the example of players with the proper mentalities. It's really got very little to do necessarily with the way they're training or, for me, the strength of the league. Yes, that can factor into it, but ultimately it's about the mentality of the players, and that isn't something that you just let them get on with. That has to be trained into them, just the same as having that conditioning has to be trained into them. The mentality of being a proper professional has to be trained into them. And I think that is something we are severely lacking in this country. I tend to think we just let players get on with it, and when you're paying them the kind of money they're getting in this country, that's a very bad idea.
I think certain players get it. I think certain teams get it. You know, you see it United. You see Rooney as one example at United, but then for years you have the likes of Ryan Giggs, who, you know, was playing up until he was 40 and was still a better physical specimen than Rooney is now.
All right, we'll come back to that, especially onto Ronaldo with the Champions League final. We'll come onto that shortly. But first, I want to go over to Richard because you're this week's quizmaster.
Hooray! Hero.
Now, I apologise that it's not the greatest quiz that I've ever done. It's what is I was thrust upon me about an hour before we went into this. So I've basically just stolen it from a website.
It's going to be my favourite quizmasters.
It's going to be fastest on the buzzer. It's 20 questions. For you to go in for it, I want you to basically just say your name. Hopefully you all know your name.
Sorry, who am I again?
So the first question is...
First or second name?
Just your first name, Nick.
We are the real professional.
I was hoping it was like University Challenge or something.
Yeah. I'll be Monkman.
I want it to be Monkman.
So the first question is, who won the Premier League Manager of the Month award in August?
Nick. Mike Beadon.
Correct.
Good shout.
Shit.
Who did Claudio Ranieri face in his final Premier League game in charge of Leicester?
Nick.
Again?
Sorry, no, failed. Because, Nick.
Go on.
Everton.
Incorrect. So it's between...
Oh, Shane. Sevilla.
Shane, no. That's not his final Premier League game.
Premier League.
Anthony?
Answer.
I don't know. West Ham.
Oh shit, I know. Can I go again?
No.
Can I go again?
No.
Please.
No.
Well, you can go again, but you're not getting a point for it.
Oh, it's Swansea, wasn't it?
It was.
Oh, bollocks.
Okay, question three. Who was the first player to be sent off in the Premier League this season?
No, I don't.
Anthony. I know he was sent off twice, so I'll guess Hollybass.
No.
Shane.
Yep.
Oh, I made a mistake. Herrera, sure.
No.
Yeah, that was wrong.
Up to you, Nick.
For God's sake.
Between the wisdom of the V2 football team here, between the old fielding.
I'll go, I think I don't know if he was sent off in the game, but Koscielny.
No, it was Ben Watson of Watford.
Oh, of course. I got the right team.
What an average
player. So this one is multiple choice. So, which of these players has not scored a Premier League hat-trick this season? And your choices are Josh King, Andre Gray, Solomon Rondon and Fernando Llorente.
Anthony.
Shane
first.
Rondon.
Incorrect.
Nick. Llorente.
Correct. Nick takes a 2-point lead.
Hooray! I don't like this quiz.
Yeah, Rondon got it again. Rondon got it on Monday Night Football.
I was just thinking he's been shit.
He got it on Monday Night Football, Rondon did. I don't know who it was against, but I remember watching it on Monday Night Football.
So, question number five. Which former Chelsea player did the club's official Twitter account accidentally name in their starting 11 ahead of their game against Everton in April?
What?
What? Can you repeat that?
Basically, which Chelsea player did they announce on their Twitter?
Oh no, I know, it's Jack.
Yep.
Jack.
Yes, they did.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Remember that.
Which Chinese club did Oscar join from Chelsea in December?
Shane. Oh god. I think it was Shangzhou Evergrande, something like that.
I can name it better than that.
Shangzhou Evergrande.
Anthony.
No, it wasn't then.
Chongqing Huanghuo.
Guangzhou Evergrande.
No.
Oh.
Yeah, fuck you.
The Xing Shang Shangas, the ones. Yeah.
Aren't they from Shaolin Soccer?
That's just pure racism.
That's for our Chinese listeners.
That is just pure racism.
No, Xing Shang Shang.
Xing
Shang. It was Shanghai
Shenhua. Fuck's sake.
No, it wasn't them either.
Oh, for God's sake, who was it?
Learning who?
It's Shanghai.
I would say Shanghai.
Question 7. Who's the most expensive Premier League signing in January?
Ooh, oh, Christ.
Ooh, Nick. Morgan Schneider, then?
Correct.
Good answer.
Nick's on 3 points.
I would not James, call that one.
Anthony's yet to score. Okay, question number 8. From how many shots did Claudio Bravo concede in a row between January and April?
Anthony.
Yep.
11.
Incorrect.
Shane.
Yep.
9.
Incorrect.
That was a total guess.
Nick, 7.
Correct.
Oh, fuck, you just went too lower.
That was a complete guess. I was to follow the pattern of 2 now.
Nick's on 4. Question 9. Fernando Llorente scored twice in stoppage time to help Swansea come from behind
Nick.
To beat Palace.
It's the Palace.
November. Well, who had initially scored the goals to put Palace 4-3 up in the 84th minute?
Nick, Zaha.
No.
Shane.
Yeah.
Oh. Benteke?
Correct.
That's such a guess.
Thanks for checking. Question 10. Who is the other Manchester City player to be sent off after Sergio Aguero's dismissal for a bad foul on Luis in the 3-1?
Shane.
Anthony first.
Fernandinho.
Correct.
It cost me a load of fantasy football points.
I was at that match. It was hilarious. Yes. So Anthony's broken his duck. This is multiple choice again, this one. How much possession did Liverpool have in their 2-0 defeat at Burnley in August?
Anthony.
Shane.
So go on then, Anthony. I was giving you multiple choice, but you just said...
81%.
No, incorrect.
So what are the options?
80.4%, 77.8%, 74.3%, or 71.2%.
Shane.
Yep.
77 point something whatever percent.
77.8%.
Yeah,
incorrect.
Sure.
Oh, Nick,
the one just below that.
74.3%.
Yeah.
Incorrect.
80.4.
Anthony was actually very close to 81%, but he was 80.4%.
Come on. I round up from a 4, right?
Even if it was rounded up, I couldn't give you.
Ouch.
Question 12. Which player has hit the woodwork more than any other in the Premier League this season?
Nick.
Yeah.
Paul Pogba.
No.
Anthony.
What?
Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Yeah. No, not Ibrahimovic.
Shane.
Yeah.
Rashford.
No.
That's worth a guess.
What's the Man United player? It was actually De Bruyne of City. 9 times. Pogba was second, was 6. Question 13. Who scored the first goal in the Premier League this season?
Anthony.
Yeah.
Abel Hernandez?
No.
What? Oh, Nick. Diamanda.
Yeah.
Correct. Nick's on fire. He's on fire.
What are me and Shane on?
Shane's on 2. You're on 1.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have asked.
Harry Kane scored Spurs' final ever goal at White Hart Lane. But who scored the first goal there this season?
Shane.
Yep.
Vertonghen.
Incorrect.
Anthony.
Yep.
Son.
Incorrect.
Nick. Eric Dyer.
Nope, it was Wanyama.
Would never have guessed that. He's rubbish.
Yeah, another multiple choice for you. So you might want to wait for this one.
Shane.
Go on then, Shane.
Diego Costa.
No. Which two clubs was Jamie Carragher talking about when he said they should come off the pitch holding their heads in shame? Was it Swansea and Villa, Leicester and Liverpool, West Ham and Everton, or City and United?
Shame.
Yep.
City and United.
No.
Damn.
Nick, Swansea and Borough.
No.
Can I have the other two options again, please?
No.
Yes, Leicester and Liverpool or West Ham and Everton.
It was Leicester and Liverpool, I think.
It was. So you're on 2 points. Question 16. Ozil recorded the highest ever number of chances created in a Premier League game against Sunderland in May. Well, how many did he make?
Anthony.
Yep.
7.
Incorrect.
Shane.
Yep.
I don't know why I said, I don't actually know. Can I have a clue?
It's a number.
It's not seven.
Is it more or less than...
I cannot say. It's not
safe. 12.
That is correct.
Okay, then.
You're on 3 points.
Yay.
Question 17. You need all three to win, Shane. Anthony can't win.
Yes.
Which team was on the end of Giroud's super scorpion kick and Andy Carroll's stunning overhead strike?
Nick Crystal Palace.
Correct.
Oh, that's correct.
18. Tottenham went unbeaten at White Hart Lane in the Premier League, winning 17 games. But which two clubs held Spurs to a draw?
Nick.
Yeah.
Man United and... No, sorry, not Man United. I set it back. Sorry, I don't know.
Okay, pass it on.
No. Everton and Man City.
No. Right, neither of them were in it.
It's Liverpool and Leicester.
It was.
Yeah.
Well done.
That was painful to listen to.
How many Premier League managers were sacked this season?
Anthony.
Shane. I feel like my name's unfair. It just goes quicker. Six.
Nope.
There we go.
Anthony.
Yep.
Seven.
Correct.
I was going to say six as well, so...
and final question. Which player had the most...
Shane.
League this season?
Diego Costa.
Incorrect.
Ah, oh, damn.
What was the question again?
I didn't hear the question either.
Which player had the most shots in the Premier League this season?
Yeah.
Anthony. Yep.
Paul Pogba.
Incorrect.
I know at the time he was injured, he had the most. Whether he's still got the most, I'll say Zlatan.
Incorrect. It was Aguero.
Oh, of course it was.
Well, the winner after all that was Nick with six.
Hooray! What do I get?
An imaginary cake.
Yeah, congratulations, Nick. Pretty clearly deserved to win from that, I think.
Hooray!
So, really good quiz as well, Richard. Thank you for organising that. I want to move on and discuss the Champions League. I'll come on to Ronaldo in a minute, especially with the earlier discussion. But Real Madrid, first team to retain the Champions League in the current format. Fantastic win. And, what can you say about Real Madrid? Fantastic side.
Yeah, they're really great. All I can say is I'm bored of them.
When you sort of go back just a few years to like the Barcelona team that was all dominant, That never won the Champions League twice in a row, and it was around for a few years, but now Real Madrid have won it three times out of the last 4 years. Mm. And 12 times in total. That's a dump. And you look at the side as well, and it just doesn't really have a weakness to it.
The thing is with talking about Barcelona and being bored of it, do you think people are a bit happier with Real Madrid winning because their play style is a bit quicker, it's a bit more interesting to watch because the criticism that was put at the Barcelona side is that it's very slow, very dull to watch. Do you think?
I'm bored of it because I'm just fed up of seeing either Barcelona or Real Madrid win the sodding thing.
Mm.
It's getting tiring.
They will have periods of change. I think you can see that although the English clubs aren't there yet, the Spanish teams are starting to get worried about the money that's in the English game at the moment.
I don't even mind the English teams winning it. I would have taken Juventus happily. That would have been pretty decent. Hell, even Bayern, or Atletico, or just one of them lot. Someone else. Ball of Real Madrid, Barca. They've had their success. When Southampton's time, or, just any other club that isn't very good.
I don't think it'll ever be Southampton's time.
No, neither do I.
To make the series.
You have to learn they can't sell the best players every year for that one.
Really? Oh, we should tell the board that. Yeah, really. They're not really on that page. Pricks.
Do you think with Real Madrid, though, it's scary when you think, players like Gareth Bale might be surplus to requirements there and might end up moving to the Premier League?
Well, even more than that, like, Bale obviously was carrying an injury. He wasn't 100% going into the game, so you could understand why he wasn't in the starting 11 and was on the bench. But James Rodriguez, was it something like 60 million they spent on him?
Mm.
And he wasn't even on the bench. He was fit.
I think too much is read into that kind of thing in the sense of we tend to be very fantastical about the Real Madrids and the Barcelona. Oh, look at the pure litany of talent they've got. isn't it incredible? Isn't it incredible? But when it happens to like a Premier League side, when a really good player starts getting dropped, we go, oh, is he past it? Is he not good enough? Oh, maybe he's just not compatible with the manager, or, you know, he doesn't fit into a play system anymore. Aguero being a great example at City. Well, all those things were kind of questioned. I think we should probably do the same thing with Real Madrid. The reason Rodriguez isn't play is because he doesn't really seem to fit too well into that system Zidane's got playing.
Oh, no, I think that was complete. That was all bought up. Yeah,
not in the English media, not really.
Now, Twitter blew up on Saturday when the team sheet was announced that Rodriguez was not dropped and was probably going to be on his way as a result of that. You know, I don't think that was, it's just an English thing for that. I think it's just perhaps that it was reported more in the Spanish media.
I think especially with things like the Bale one, though, in which I think it's kind of apparent Bale doesn't terribly fit well within that team. Maybe if Ronaldo's not there, but Christ, you wouldn't get rid of Ronaldo, no, would you? So maybe it does actually make sense for someone like Bale to leave, definitely. Because if you don't fit really well in the team, you're paying that money out on wages, on loyalty bonuses, all that lot, and someone will still pay you a hell of a lot of money for him. Why wouldn't you sell him at that point? I don't think it's a case of being surplus to requirements, but surplus to the system,
mm-hmm.
more than anything. And I think that's when we think about it as in, Christ, look at a player like Gareth Bale or Rodriguez being subbed as requirements. How much talent do they have? That kind of makes it seem like, you know, these clubs are these gargantuan things, when really they have the same exact problems and benefits that every other club has, just we blow out proportion every single time because we see how high their ratings are in FIFA.
I want to discuss Cristiano Ronaldo, who, talking about FIFA, he's on the cover of the FIFA 18. I don't know if either of you saw that.
Yeah.
But how good has he been? He's only scored 42 goals this season. It's his lowest return since his first season at Madrid, but it's been a ridiculous season again for him, hasn't it?
Well, quarter-final of the Champions League, he scored a hat-trick against Bayern. Semi-final, he scored a hat-trick against Atletico. And in the final, he only managed to brace.
Mm. It's crazy, isn't it?
It's just unbelievable.
But what?
Yeah, we'll look back as when we're older and, you know, we'll be telling our grandkids that, you know, we watched two of the probably the greatest players of all time in one generation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Jay, Nick, do you think we'll be looking at Ronaldo like, you know, like a Pele or as good as Pele sort of level?
Better.
Better, yeah.
I mean, you can look at Pele and we can say the whole playing in a certain generation of, you know, players. I don't particularly buy into that. You don't compare them across generations and say, oh, if you played them all in the same team, this one would be better. That, I don't think, comes into me. For me, it's he's gone to different countries, different leagues. Wherever he's gone, he's had success. He's made that success. He's played consistently at whatever level he's been at any age, at any different kind of division. He's done it across all the different competitions. He's done it for his international team. He's done it for his club on a domestic basis. He's done it on the European basis, in Champions League. There's nowhere he hasn't gone and done it. Whereas if you look at players sometimes like Pelé, there are still those elements of, did they ever push themselves far enough? With Maradona, you've got all those other kinds of questions about sort of lifestyle and, you know, sportsmanship and all those kinds of things. And with Bale, he's the most complete player in history. I think the only thing he's going to be missing from his, you know, cabinet at the end of it is a World Cup. That'll be it.
Well, I think, as I say, with this day and age, I think he's 100%, I think he's better. By Dinner and Messi, but compare them to old players in the sense that in this day and age, the game has changed so much. It's watched more around the world. We're not just talking like you've got the television on BBC One like at 7 o'clock at night once a week. I mean, we're talking football's watched around the world in every single country. Social media, the list goes on. And for these players, Messi and Ronaldo, to step up, it's for Ronaldo, particularly talking about Saturday, to step up and put in the performances that they do, it's just quite remarkable. So, yeah, 100% for me, it's Ronaldo all day long.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree somewhat with Shane in regards to pairing players from different eras, because for that, you know, a player nowadays has to live, like we've gone back to sort of Rooney before, if you want to be the very best at this level, you've got to eat, breathe, sleep, everything football. Your entire lifestyle has to be based around it. And you can see with Ronaldo, just his pure physique, he is an athlete of the highest level. You go back, you know, a couple of generations, and after a match, and you know, most players after a match would go out into town, have a number of beers, have a fag, and the, you know, their physical specimen wasn't the same. They weren't athletes back then.
True, you know, I get that point, but I think it's almost a bit like comparing the braveness of soldiers and saying, well, the soldiers these days are much more advanced than the soldiers back in ancient Rome, but that's entirely relative to their time. That was the culture of their time. So if he's, if you know, you've got Pelé, the best player of his generation, of his time, then he can't have been that kind of level of professional, because that even understanding of it, the idea of that could be what players are, didn't exist at all. Half the research didn't exist for it. We're talking about, you know, the sports science. Nobody had even bothered to do that research or looked into it to that level at that point. No clubs had the infrastructure to maintain it for a player. So to kind of say he's worse on that basis, that's taking in too many elements that are simply just too out of his control. I say on the same basis, we can't condemn people 100 years ago for the terrible ideas they had about life and all of these kinds of things. I think at that point it becomes a little bit harsh. But what I think is, if you try and look at it, what they achieved in their lifetimes and what they did, what levels they did at, how consistently they did it at, someone like Ronaldo is a much more complete player than someone like Pelé.
I'll take you.
And I would even say that same about Messi. Is the reason that I think Ronaldo is better than Messi and will have a better legacy than Messi.
I take your point. I think for me, I think the main thing, because he said a comment, you know, you can look at my numbers, the stats, and they don't lie. And to me, I think that was almost, you know, referencing Pelé, because, you know, there's articles written on it about the stats and how he's, it's, I don't want to say fraudulent, but there's some questions that are a bit dubious when you consider some of the games which he counts in, which are counted in his record, you know, exhibition games and certain things like that, which, and all of Ronaldo's games are in La Liga, the Champions League, Premier League, whatever.
Yeah, and Pelé's, you know, the vast majority of his career, he didn't really leave Brazil. Apart from that, he went to play in, what, you know, the USA.
New York Cosmos.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to move on from that and just give Juventus a mention, especially Mario Mandzukic, a fantastic goal. And, you know, I think under different circumstances, I think maybe it could have been considered as one of the great Champions League goals.
Yeah.
I think that raises a different question, though, about whether you, you know, how much the context of the goal, the ability of the goal, what makes a, you know, the perfect goal, the goal of the season or whatever.
There's two sides to it, obviously. I mean, on the one hand, you think a big goal in the right moment, it's worth more than a fantastic goal where you score when you're 4-0 down. At the moment Mandzukic scored, Juventus still had a chance. Juventus was still in that game, and it was an absolutely world-class goal. I do think the context is important, but at the end of it, you're not thinking, right, they're 4-0 up, the other team's dropped off, we're not really trying too hard anymore, we're not trying to defend, so you got the chance to, but that didn't happen at all. The context of that is one of the best goals I've ever seen in a final. Yeah. That is one of the best goals I think has ever been scored in a fight. It was to be able to have the technical ability and the foresight to do that and have the confidence to know it's going to come off when you're doing it. And the level of team play it had in it as well. It had the individual greatness, it had the team greatness. It had that degree of technical ability that the average person could only dream of, being able to do that with football. So I think that is, yeah, regardless of the context of them losing that game, that is one of the best goals I've ever seen in the final.
Okay.
Can I just go back to the thing about greatest player? Because I just want to put something forward to see if you agree on this point then.
Okay.
Cristiano Ronaldo is the greatest club footballer of all time. Pelé is the greatest international footballer of all time.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I wouldn't argue with that.
I'd probably go with that. Yeah, that's a good... I don't know. It's hard for me because I think, personally, I don't really think you can easily judge players you never saw play. I know you can watch clips and stuff, but I find it very difficult when I'm asked who the greatest player of all time is. How can I possibly judge Pelé based off, you know, some YouTube clips, personally?
I think you can look at it from the stats. The one thing Ronaldo's got going against him is Pelé played alongside other great Brazilian players. Ronaldo has not had other great Portuguese players. He's had very, very average teammates.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, okay. The one... I'd actually go against my point on that in that Pelé, yeah, had a very good Brazilian team with him. And perhaps on that note, that Diego Maradona's 86 World Cup, he played out of his skin. He won the World Cup for Argentina. They had an okay squad, but it was very much that he won that World Cup.
I just want to move on from that, conscious of the time. I want to discuss a few Premier League transfers, which are ongoing, I suppose you could say. Start with Romelu Lukaku, who said today in Belgian media that the club's been agreed and his agent is working on his contract with a new club. He implied it was a Premier League club currently playing in the Champions League. So based on that, you would guess either United or Chelsea?
I've heard it's very likely to be Chelsea.
Mm. I have as well, fortunately.
Okay, what are your thoughts on him going to Chelsea then? Assuming it is Chelsea, for argument's sake. Do you think he's good enough to make that step?
Yeah, I think he is. For one thing, I'd say it makes good sense, especially if they are going to lose Costa, because he's a very similar kind of player. He's aggressive, he's a target man, he can hold the ball up. And for all the people who say, you know, Lukaku's not very good, I think it's like the last three seasons, he's scored 20-plus goals, and he's not been doing it in teams that were particularly good. He's been doing it in teams where he doesn't get a massive amount of service, where the whole team's not based around him, where he's essentially having to do a lot of it himself. And I think he suffers a bit from the Ozil problem. Oh, he's on that pitch, he doesn't always look that enthusiastic, he's a bit mopey, and he doesn't always do it necessarily in the big moments, you know, in the TV moments. But I don't think you can judge a player on that basis. He is a consistent Premier League goal scorer. If you're looking at being a top five team, you've got to have a player up front who can get 20 goals. He can do that. He's already proved he can do that in a worse team. So I think for all the naysayers of Lukaku, I think there needs to be a question of, look at his actual record. And then do you still agree that he's not good enough?
I'd certainly go for Lukaku over some of the other players that have been linked with United over the summer as a striker option, with Morata and Belotti. Both who are fantastic strikers, but both haven't done it in the Premier League yet.
Well, that would be the big thing. I think, not being a United fan, but if I were a United fan, I'd rather have Lukaku than Griezmann. Now, I know how ridiculous that seems, but in the system Man United play, I think Griezmann slides about six players out of position, and Lukaku fits in pretty nicely without having to change every single player's position in that team. I think it would have made a very good sense for United to go on and sign a player like Lukaku, whereas it would have made a bit less sense to sign a player like Griezmann. I think if Man United have missed out on this one, that's probably the best striker they could have currently got. The most proven striker I'm talking about. They're not, you know, the best ability necessary, but the best striker for the best fit that they could have got.
Okay, here's a question. If you were Lukaku and you had the choice of those, presume it's just those two clubs you could join, who would you join?
I think Bayern are very keen as well.
Okay, well, which club? I wanted to try and limit it to just Chelsea and United for purposes of discussion, but who would you join at this present moment?
Chelsea. You've got to think that Costa's probably on his way. It's the Premier League champions. You've come from that club. The manager that got rid of you is at the other club.
Mm. Less media pressure as well at Chelsea than there is at United.
Yeah, and then Chelsea got a habit of doing as well, like Matic as well.
David Luiz.
And the simple thing is he's going to have friends at Chelsea. It seems ridiculous, but it's the same part of the thinking that Pogba's going to have had going back to United. There are people he knows there. It's not going into an alien environment you're unfamiliar with people you don't really know. You're going back to somewhere you know, somewhere you've lived before, somewhere where there's people around you, you know. It's a hell of a lot easier to settle.
The only thing perhaps with United is that he wouldn't really have to up sticks from where he is.
True. But then there's,
you know, if his family's got settled in the area, then, you know, he could stay there. That's about the only straw that I'm clutching at for United.
I guess you could easily counter that with the London argument. You know, a lot of foreign players want to go to London. But yeah. I want to talk about Jermaine Defoe, who... Sunderland, it was in his contract that should Sunderland be relegated, he could leave on a free, which I know David Moyes wasn't very happy about. But he's said he's working on deals to go to Bournemouth. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a good signing for Bournemouth. I'm personally a little disappointed he hasn't decided to stay with Sunderland. Because I know players are mercenaries and they want to go where the money is. They want to go where, you know, he wants to be able to get in the England squad. He's probably not going to do that from the Championship. But he's talked a lot about his commitment to Sunderland in the last year or two. And then, to the second things go bad, just to leave, I think that makes it... It's a bit of an Adam Lallana situation for me. It's all very good, you know, thumping the badge and getting the first offer that comes in, you're up sticks. It's a bit... You're kind of deceiving the fans a bit. And I really don't like that, personally.
I think with...
But again, I can understand his big reasons.
I guess being in the Championship, though, that's, you know, a step down. And I personally, I don't blame him, you know, if your club gets... You know, he's clearly too big for that club. It's almost a bit of a one-man club, really.
Yeah, no, I can understand it definitely on that basis. I just I don't like the whole acting like the club is your life and you love everything about it, but then the second things go bad there, or, you know, you get a better offer from elsewhere leaving. I think that's...
I do wonder with this, and sorry for sort of bringing the elephants in the room out, but obviously at Sunderland he became quite, very good friends with the lad Bradley Lowry, who's unfortunately very, very ill now. I do wonder if he will hold fat air on a move to Bournemouth, etc., until unfortunately the poor lad's passed away.
Mm. Well, I mean, yeah, it's a horrible thing to talk about, but that is kind of what I'm talking about when I say it's all very well and good saying you want to stick to a club and all of that lot. There's clearly ties there, but at the end of the day, you do feel it's a cynical decision to go and leave rather than the romantic decision. And at the end of the day in football, especially with all the stories coming out about Defoe in the last year or so, you'd kind of hope. I think people would have had a hell of a lot more respect for him if he stayed. Mm. And at the end of your career, when you've kind of made all your records, you've done all the things you're really going to do on that pitch, I think that gives you a different kind of legacy. I think he's maybe leaving that behind.
I think for him, because he's picked a club like Bournemouth, I almost think it helps, because he's clearly not going to be on a massive wage there. It's not like he's joined a more established Premier League club where he could earn a lot more money. He's probably not going to be on any more than he currently is at Sunderland, you'd have thought. And yeah, I don't know. For me, I don't think he's got much choice. You know, he's only got a year or two left at the top level, and yeah, enjoy it in the Premier League. I want to talk about Virgil van Dijk. I don't know if you want to talk about him, Shane.
Go on.
So, Liverpool
might be getting reported to the Premier League for breaking rules on tapping him up. Do you want him to stay at the club, or do you see him as a bit of a mercenary, same as Jermaine Defoe?
Obviously, I'd like him to stay at the club because he's got the ability. He is, for me, one of the best centre-backs in the Premier League, and by default, one of the best centre-backs in the world. I'd put him in the top 10. The problem is, on the one hand, the amount of money we could get for him, we're talking in excess of 60 million here. That is a crazy amount of money. That is, we don't have a single other player in that squad we can get that kind of money for. And if we are going to get rid of Claude Puel, having that kind of money to reinvest into the team for any new potential manager could be quite a big pull. So there's that other side to it. I think with the whole tapping up thing, as much as I'd like to rile and rant about, you know, how this constantly happens to us, we sent three players off to the World Cup and none of them came back because Steven Gerrard was having a word in Lallana's ear and Lambert's ear, come over to Liverpool, come over to Liverpool, Rooney to Luke Shaw, come over to United, come over to United. We sent these players off and we never got them back. That was tapping up. It was one way or the other. But the problem is, if we're going to start applying this rule about tapping up, we've got to, one, clearly define it, and two, apply it universally. At the moment, it's the state of affairs where a club can approach an agent without having talked to the club, and they can then go and say to that player, how much would you want to move? How much? So let's talk about the contract, because you see all the time, they've agreed a contract, but the clubs haven't actually entered discussions to talk about how much they would sell it for. And I think, for me, that's tapping up. Just because you're doing it through your agent and you're not doing it yourself, that is tapping up. But we're not applying these rules universally. So it's a case of, yes, if we're going to apply it to this situation and start to say, right, we're going to be a bit more hard with this. This is an example being made, and then we're going to go from there and we're going to really start applying rules about tapping up again. But good, great. If it's just going to be a one-time thing, I'd almost rather they didn't, because then it's just a little bit pointless. Mm. Then it doesn't really have any value apart from to us at Southampton, and I'm not so selfish that I wouldn't want to sacrifice more universal values in football for that. So, yeah, there's a lot of questions about it, but I don't think there's really quite clearly a right and wrong in it. I hope he stays, because I think it's more of a statement to say we're keeping hold of Van Dijk than it is to get the £60 million in. I think we're a Premier League club. We're not exactly poor. We do quite well for money. We've got the money to spend if we really do need to spend money. We always kind of shy away from it anyway, but we don't need it. So I'd rather... what we do need is to keep playing like that. That's a bigger statement than getting money in. So I'd rather we kept it on that basis.
Okay, fair enough.
I think £60 million for him, though, is a lot of money. Yeah, I agree he is a very good centre-back, but I wouldn't have him in top 10 in the world.
Yeah, but let's ignore the whole how highly do you rate him thing. The problem with Southampton is we have an image at the moment. We're a selling club. We're a feeder club. We sell players to bigger teams. They come in, they stay 1 or 2 years, they leave. If we can start to break that mould, that's when we look back every season. We always talk about it at some point and say, look at the team Southampton could have had. we need to get past the point of saying, look at the team we could have had to look at the team we've got. The only way we do that is by keeping hold of players. It has to start somewhere, and why not start with the biggest transfer offer we'd ever receive? Because that's really making a statement about what kind of club we want to be, whereas we've got had Claude Puel in, either he stays or he goes, either one of those situations isn't great in terms of how the club looks to the outside. We sell another one of our very good players, again, it doesn't look great, maybe another one then goes, because he's just gone as well. We've had Stephen Davis saying that would be a real coup for the club we managed to keep if we then go and sell it. Stephen Davis looks a bit dumb, so the other players who are thinking that, maybe they want to leave the club. So it's worse for, it's good. It's a good amount of money for the player, I agree, and if it's most other clubs, I wouldn't disagree with a transfer. But we've really got to put a line in the sand here and say, actually, hang on, we're not just going to be everyone's feeder team. We are for ourselves here.
Mm-hmm. I think it was 60 million, though. You could buy two centre-backs who are as good as, or if not better, for that money. In Southampton, you go out and get that quality of player, perhaps, but you could certainly invest in three or four very good players for that money.
Yeah, and again, I do agree it's a good amount of money for the player. I think our reputation, though, the hit we'd take from selling Van Dijk is worse than the relative goodness of getting that kind of money in. I think there would be a lot of questions being asked internally, but also I think we'd look a less appealing prospect. We would look like a feeder club, Ben. We already do. We'd really just cement it. And the only way you're ever really actually going to step up and get those better players in is by not looking like a feeder club, is by looking like a competitive club. Well, whilst you're a feeder club, you can't be a competitive club. So I think we've got to fix our image problem first.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, just to finish the show, I just want to mention the V2 Football Awards, which were voted on. Which was nominated by us and voted on by you guys on Twitter. I'll go through this season's awards. Firstly, Premier League Player of the Season. Nominees were Eden Hazard, Ander Herrera, Harry Kane and N'Golo Kante. I saw one person complain on Twitter about Herrera being nominated. Here, I believe it was you that nominated him. Do you want to justify that to our Twitter follower?
Well, it was Man United Player of the Year. Man United won 3 trophies. Tough.
I will add, I'd like you, Twitter person, whoever you are. I agree, Herrera's scum.
Well, he's scum, but some teams need to...
No, he's scum. I want him to die. In old age, you can just stop playing football at the moment.
Okay. Well,
it's like Diego Costa. I hate Diego Costa with an absolute passion, but I would love him on my team.
Well, Herrera only got 17%, as did Eden Hazard, who was my pick. N'Golo Kante got 30%, so the winner was Harry Kane with 36%.
Yeah, I mean, no laugh.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, manager.
I mean, I can't understand how Herrera got the same as Hazard in that vote. Cracks how many United fans listen to his podcast.
Yeah, I will be honest on this. I only picked Herrera because the other three were gone.
I would have picked Valencia if I had to pick a United player myself, but
I wouldn't have picked a United player.
Yeah, well, that was what I was going to go on to say. I just want to go on to manager of the season. The nominees: Paul Clement, Antonio Conte, Sean Dyche, and Mauricio Pochettino. I think this was a very hard one to narrow it down to four. I wanted Eddie Howe in there as well, but it is, you know, yeah. Any argument with Conte winning it with 53% of the vote?
No, not really. Paul Clement, maybe, but that's a different kind of management saving thing.
Yeah. Young player of the season, which followed up from our young 11. We had Dele Alli, Jordan Pickford, Leroy Sané and James Ward-Prowse. James Ward-Prowse deserved to win it, Shane? Or
probably not, but yes.
I voted Jordan Pickford myself. What did you think, Hero?
Dele Alli by an absolute country mile should have won that.
Yeah.
And he did as well with 57% of the vote.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I'll let Hero guess who my nominee was for the next one. European Player of the Season. Nominees were Bernardo Silva, Kylian Mbappe, Cristiano Ronaldo and Edinson Cavani.
Well, I said it before you even named them, didn't you, sir?
You vote Cavani?
I nominated Cavani because I think he's had a fantastic season at PSG. I think he's proved a lot of people wrong in replacing Zlatan as the main man.
I think you need to leave the show.
Somebody else want to read out the rest of the awards?
I think it shows how much the PSG board think of him that already that they're trying to get a new striker in.
Well, 5% of the Twitter population agreed with me who voted.
5%?
5%.
5% of people are idiots.
6% went for Bernardo Silva. Mbappe got 36% and Ronaldo clear winner with 52%, which I don't think we can argue with, really, can we?
That's the right order of things.
For Mbappe, that's a decent number.
Worst managerial appointment of the season. Bob Bradley, Francesco Gridlin, David Moyes, or, in my opinion, a very harshly named Mike Phelan.
It's got to be Brad Bobley.
Yeah, he won it by 57%, David Moyes 31%, and 12% combined for Gridlin and Phelan.
I try not to be harsh about managers, but he's one of those managers who should not ever do that job ever again. Yeah. He's actually just terrible. He's just not very good at it. I don't think he should be a football manager. He should reconsider a new career.
I'm trying to be harsh. Is there anyone else you could consider? Obviously, Moyes had a terrible season. For me, I think Gridlin and Mike Phelan are both very harsh. But I don't know. I can't think of any managers who are worse appointments.
I would put Moyes in very much, just because of how negative he was for the entire season.
Yeah. Okay, and sticking with the bottom of the Premier League, relegated Premier League player of the season, the options were Jermaine Defoe, Ben Gibson, Harry Maguire and Jordan Pickford.
Maguire, come on.
He only got 15% of the vote. What do you think, Aaron?
Pickford.
I voted Pickford as well, but he was second with 30%. Ben Gibson only got 8%, and clear winner there was the mercenary Jermaine Defoe, 46% of the vote.
Yeah, but it turns out 46% of the Twitter population are morons.
The what the fudge moment of the season, was it Moyes threatening a reporter, McCormack going missing? I don't know what that's about, to be honest.
Kidnapped by ISIS.
Really?
That's now a new moment.
I don't know what it's about. I'm genuinely curious what it's about. I should have read up on the story.
Kidnapped by ISIS. It would have been on the front page of every newspaper.
Okay. Moyes threatening the female reporter. McCormack going missing because he was kidnapped by ISIS. PSG's bottling it versus Barcelona or Wayne Shaw and Piegate.
I went for Piegate just because that's one of them things that, if you'd said at the start of the season what was one of the things that would happen this season, you wouldn't expect a fat man on a bench eating a pie would make some page headlines.
Yeah.
It is truly a what the fudge moment.
Well, it only finished second in our poll with 27%. PSG's bottling it versus Barcelona won it with 48% of our vote.
That's idiots.
Oh, yeah, we're up by 1% now. It used to be 47% and more, and now it's 48%. Come on, sorry, Twitter.
Somebody losing a game to Barcelona is that's amazing. That'll never happen again.
Mm. Whereas Batman eats pie on bench. Jeez.
That takes the front page of the national papers.
Yeah, that is probably a bit amazing. Becomes the most talked about event. I saw articles on that come up on LinkedIn. That's how ridiculous that was. Business networks are talking about Piegate. It's just ridiculous.
What's the name of the award?
What the fudge moment of the season?
Yes.
Guest of the season, the options were John Curtis, Luke de Gilbert, Saul Isaacson Hurst, who was my nomination, and Nick Tanner. So the winner with that by quite a large margin was Luke de Gilbert, 67%. Congratulations to him, and just want to say thanks to everyone, all the other guests, as well as those four who've appeared on our show over the season. Just two more awards left to go. Firstly, what was our worst prediction of the season? Was it Man United to win the league, Chelsea would struggle, West Ham would make the top four, or Zlatan Ibrahimovic will be a flop at Man United?
See, I know our listeners are mostly Man United fans, so I reckon it'll be one of the United ones, but I should win this one. For my Chelsea will struggle prediction. I should win it for the accumulation of Chelsea will struggle and Ukraine with dark horses for the Euros. I am not good at this.
What do you think, Rich?
Yes, Shames.
Surprisingly, it finished last of the four.
I told you, United fans. Thank you.
No. Well, West Ham making the top four would make the top four, which is what I said at the start of the season. Won it with 30% of the vote.
Oh, I mean, that was a daft suggestion, but you know.
Yeah.
Let you off.
And just the final award, Cup Run of the Season. Which club had the best Cup Run this season? Coventry, who won the EFL trophy. Lincoln City or Sutton United with their FA Cup runs. Or Monaco and their Champions League exploits.
Sutton.
What do you think?
Monaco.
Monaco were second with 29%, but the winners were Lincoln City with 39% of the vote for their FA Cup run. I guess Piegate must have tainted Sutton United's FA Cup run a bit. And yeah, that brings the V2 Football Awards for 2016-17 season to an end. And yeah, this is our final show of the season, I guess. We'll be doing a few other shows over the summer, a few quiz shows, a few specials and things. But yeah, it's been a great season. Thanks for listening to the show over the whole season. Really enjoyed doing it. And also, follow us on Twitter at V2Football. Check out v2football.com, our website. And also, yeah, thanks to Chris as well for organising all this and, you know, loads of hosting. He's obviously not on tonight, but yeah. Thanks to guests tonight, Richard Hudson, Shane Lees, and Nick Davey, who's gone somewhere. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.